Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a marionette, and I love films. As Claude Monet once said, my wish is to stay always like this, living quietly in a corner of nature, watching School of Rock on heavy rotation. Beautiful idea from Claude Monet there. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. If you've never heard the show, check out the back catalogue. I've got Jamelia Jamil, I've got Ricky Gervais, I've got January Jones, I've got Asim Chowdhury, I've got James McNicholas, I've got guests coming out my ears. This week, my special guest is the one and only Mr. Jamie Demetriou. Get your tickets for tonight's Films to be Buried With live at the BFI. That is August the 15th. I don't know when you're listening to this. You probably missed it, you animals. But if you're still around, there's a couple of tickets left for tonight. It is with the incredible writer and star of Game Face, one of my favourites, Roisin Conaty. Tickets are on the BFI website. Get hold of them quick. And if you do enjoy this podcast and you want to support it and get more content, please come and join me over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get extra guest questions for most episodes. You'll get some videos, put some videos up this week. You get some guest list tickets, you get recommendations, you get all sorts of stuff. This week, there is a full 25 minutes of extra chat with Jamie, where we discuss Paul Thomas Anderson movies. We talk about Whiplash. We talk about all sorts of shit. You'll love it. And remember, best of all, if you do become a Patreon member, not only do you get lots of extra good stuff, you don't even have to hear this bit about becoming a Patreon member. You get the whole episode completely unencumbered by ads and me talking about becoming an effing Patreon member. So give it a look over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Thank you very much. So, here we go. Jamie Demetriou is an actor, writer and very funny character comedian. He is just about to release the second series of the excellent Stathlet's Flats, which starts on Monday the 19th of August at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. If you've not seen the show, it is very funny and you need to get on board so that you're not left behind feeling like an absolute tool. Jamie came over a few months ago to record this, but I've been holding on to it for the release of his show. It's quite a big deal because he doesn't do a lot of podcasts and he rarely performs as himself, rarely turns up and speaks to himself. We had such a laugh. You are absolutely going to love it. So anyway, that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 57 of Films to be Buried With. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein, and I am your host. I'm joined today by an incredible guest. He is an actor, a writer, a sketch comedian, a singer, a bad estate agent, fictional, and a Channel 4 sitcom superstar. Please welcome to the show the one and only Mr. Jamie Demetriou. Yeah,
sitcom superstar was...
Here he is.
My favourite. Thanks, man. Thanks for saying I'm a sitcom superstar.
You are.
You forgot to mention Brett Goldstein, sort of equal...
Brett Goldstein lookalike?
Well, lookalike, yeah. Equal sound of equal makes me think I'm equal, as good as you.
No, equal, I'm absolutely flattered to
be. No. Well, maybe Brett Goldstein wishes he was. I wish I was a Brett.
I wish I were Jamie Demetriou.
Well, then, and that's how we equal out. I keep forgetting which one I am.
Yeah. We do have a similar look, if I may.
Yeah, just ambiguous.
And Europe. Where are they from?
Yeah.
What's wrong with them? And are we safe with them?
I think I'm on the lower end. I think if people were to be like, what's the difference between the two of them? They'd be like, Brett's the... I don't want to be mean about Jamie, but Brett is... And you know where that sentence goes.
I think the end of that sentence is, Jamie's the one I feel safer alone in a room with.
Oh, God. I was going to say Brett can wear a leather jacket.
Exactly.
And Jamie can't. I wouldn't look confident in a leather jacket in the way you do. I feel like your leather jacket grew... out of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's made of my own skin.
Yeah, it started at your cuffs and it sort of grew back onto your body.
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't know if I mean that.
Imagine
if I did mean that.
You shaved a leather jacket off someone else and then put it on and then felt weird in it.
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay. Thanks for coming to my place.
Love this podcast, mate.
Nice of you to say so. I love your sitcom, Stath Let's Flats.
Yeah, a good title for a sitcom, that.
It's very funny. Proper, like, jokes, character funny.
Thanks, man.
Made me laugh, and I was on my own and laughed, and that's powerful stuff.
Oh, really? That's nice. Yeah, I always feel like I'm going mad when I'm on my own and I'm laughing. I don't think I do that often.
Yeah, it is actually rare to laugh alone in your house.
I'll occasionally do one big clap with a very straight face. Yeah.
Appreciated.
Yeah. I do. I really appreciate that. Thanks very much, mate. It was very hard. Sure, and I was very sad for a long time writing it.
Right. That's comedy.
That's comedy.
Did you feel any joy during the production?
Shooting were six of the best weeks I've ever had. And I've had shit loads of
weeks. You've had some good weeks. I've seen your Instagram.
Oh, not good weeks, just weeks.
Oh, right.
The good ones are few and far, but shooting it was amazing and weirdly made it feel worth. Did it make it feel worthwhile? I don't know if 5.5 years of misery is 6 weeks can make that worthwhile.
I did when we made Super Bob. That was basically sentence. five years altogether, yeah. And the shoot was the best time of my life. But the shoot was 18 days. So it was 18 days out of 5 years, and you think, is that balance right, that ratio?
Right. And is the euphoria coming from the fact that you know you're nearing the end of the horrible time? It's because it's the closest time to the end of making it.
No, well, I think it's because you're finally fucking doing this thing that you've been trying to do forever, and you never...
Right.
I certainly think you must have had this. If you were 5 years in development with that, just so many times of like, well, this is never going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this I wrote it off after a year and a half. But it does sort of, when you really think about it, it does make the joy of doing it irrelevant. When you're like, well, I need to not do that again. Be miserable for that long. No way. What, for 6 weeks of happiness? No.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a film in very, very early development. Mm-hmm. And I...
Out in 2023?
Oh, my God. No, in my head, I have... I started Stath when I was 24. Mm-hmm. And I wrapped 2 days before I was 30.
Wow. Fuck.
Yeah. And so I started properly thinking about doing this film and talking to, people who can make it around 30. And I'm thinking, realistically, if I set my sights any sooner than 40, I'm going to be very upset. I think I'll be 40 when I make it and the character won't work anymore.
I'd love to reassure you that that's not the case, but I think that's a reasonable way.
Yeah, I think tenure...
I think tenure is.
I made a short film of it, and that is enough for me.
Is that the car? You took me in the car?
Yeah.
Great short film.
Thanks, man.
Available on Sky Arts.
It's actually on YouTube. Thanks, guys.
Available on YouTube.
I went to look at a camera, but there isn't one. But there is one.
There is one.
Brett's filming me.
I didn't tell him that, but he's just seen the camera.
Yeah.
It's always filming.
The little teddy bear eye.
And you can say this now. I believe this will come out after you've announced it. You're making a series two.
S2.
Which will be less than 5 years in the making.
That's been a nice process, knowing that it's nearby. But it's also worrying, because it's like, does it, if anyone liked it, did they like it because it took 5.5 years to make?
Because of all the suffering.
Right. I mean, it's like the second album thing. It's like, are there any... There are loads of second albums that are better than the first one, aren't there? What's a good second series?
I think most sitcoms, second series is the best series.
Really?
Yeah, because the hardest thing is building your world. and you've built your world. Yeah. Then second series is like, oh, we've got the world, now we can play with the characters
right.
and have some fun. And then after that, it becomes two-dimensional and then it always loses its way. But second series right, is yeah. strong.
Cause Parks and Rec, I think, 3 and 4, pretty good.
Yeah.
2, 3, 4 are good.
Red Dwarf, first series, finding its feet. Second series,
it's not a reference confident. I would jump to. I don't really.
I'm not a dwarf guy. Just trying to think of sitcoms that were funny.
Wait. The Office, I think they're evenly good.
Yeah, that's true.
Partridge, right? I'm Alan Partridge, which I guess you can't really call series 1 and 2 because it's so much gone before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're equally good. But I only found out like a couple of years ago that the general consensus, I think among the people who made it as well, is that they shouldn't have done a second series.
Oh, really?
Which I find very weird because I think a lot of the best stuff is in series 2.
Yeah.
And that's films for you. And this is a chat about films.
Yeah. So you're making stuff in a fifth of the time you made the last series.
Yeah.
So it will be rushed and
yeah.
on the cuff.
And we're off looking for it to be bad, but not shit.
Yeah.
Just like crap.
Great.
If it's just crap. I mean, I have no sense.
Do you have no more good. Confidence in it now? Now you've
less.
Really got less confidence.
Yeah. I mean, I'm basically as confident as I am near to the last person who complimented it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you were just quite nice about it.
Yeah.
So I've got a little spring in my step. You see my foot's waggling. I'm pooing on your couch.
Lovely.
But yeah, my head goes, yeah, there was that bit that you think is really bad. I'll go, yeah, you're right. It was the worst show ever made. What about that line that you don't like in it? God, yeah, I forgot. It is.
We should burn every copy.
Yeah, it does stink. I haven't watched it for so long.
Did you watch it again before you started writing, or have you left it?
Well, I started writing so soon after
after
it went out.
One more question about the joy of it.
Please.
Which was so minimal. When you made 6 weeks of shooting was
Everyone
fun.
Involved in it is going to listen to this. I really...
You loved the shoot. You said that.
Okay, positives.
Yeah.
I think I love the cast and the crew and everyone involved in making it, producers, director, so much. I was very, very, very happy that we got to cast the people that we did.
Yeah.
That is one thing that I stand by with it, is I think it's got a really good cast. Really, I just think that everyone is brilliant and I'm impressed by everyone in it.
And it's a proper ensemble. That's the other thing. It's great. Every character is funny.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Well done them. They really are in their own right. They're all people that I just want to see on TV and want to see do stuff and want to see them do the stuff that I've seen them do. That they've come up with themselves, like Al Roberts, for example, who plays Al opposite me, is, you know, I saw him in my first year at the Fringe, and I lost my mind. I thought he was the funniest. He was doing Footlights, and I thought he was the funniest people I'd ever seen in my life. And I've just been waiting since to see him in a role that I thought was worthy of him, and that's why the character's called Al.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, not that I was the person to do it. I just was like, I give him a lot of... I like him to do his own thing in it, so, yeah.
And when it came out, and it did well, I believe, it did well enough to get your second series,
right.
Didn't
it? I mean, it went out during Love Island and the World Cup and the summer.
Yes.
And as a result, a nerves breakdown. so I think 14 people saw it, but I only knew, like, 12 of them.
Yeah.
There were two strangers, and I've seen them. I'm stalking them, weirdly.
Tell me what other bit did you like?
Yeah.
Chasing people off the bus who'd stopped to say hello.
Yeah.
Did you see all of them?
Yeah, they didn't.
Why did you stop watching after 5? I just haven't got round to it. It's in my Skybox.
I do get, when people do come up to me, I do get sometimes like, just completely unwelcome. Just like, I saw your show. I saw your show. And you go, go on. And they go, it grew on me.
Oh, God.
I like episode 4.
God.
You're like, all right. Thank you.
Thanks for sticking with it when you clearly didn't like three of them.
Yeah. Cheers for... And what was happening when you came up to me there? Everyone's just assuming you want to know everything in the world. But it's fine. But the people who have been lovely and are listening to this, thanks so much. It genuinely... Like I said... If someone comes up to me and says they really like it, I get to like it for about 10 minutes.
You get to like episode 4.
Yeah. And loathe every other one. I'm like, you're right. Every other one has ruined telly.
Shit. So you're going to make a film. Do you like films? You're a film guy.
Yeah, I think I was obsessed growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, big Empire collector since I was, like, seven. My pocket money might as well have been called Video Viking money. So I used to go to my local video shop was called Video Viking, and it was just no question to me that that's what it would be spent on, and I would just hire anything.
Yeah.
I wanted to see everything. I've watched so much telly. But I think the more I get into doing it for a living, the less I find it easy to concentrate, especially when watching stuff at home. Like when I go, a lot of the time I'll go to the cinema to unblock writer's block. So I just end up missing the film because I feel...
Because you don't have ideas while you're watching it.
Yes, I'll be watching... It's like, I don't know if you have this, but I find it's so much easier to write or just do anything when I'm not supposed to be doing it. It was like at uni, I could never write an essay. But then if everyone was going on a big night out, I'd be like, I'm going to stay in and do this. It's like whatever the cheekiest thing you can be doing, my brain will make me do it.
You're going out on pills? I've just written an essay, mate.
Tell you what, I'm fucked from last night, mate. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Tap, tap, tap. But no, so I go to the cinema and I just spend the whole time being like, he does let the flat. Which is the outcome of every episode. A lot of people are like, when is he going to let a flat? I'm like, he does. He always does. Because the joke of the show is, you'd be mad to not be able to let a flat because all you have to do is just point at a flat. It's got nothing to do with you. Anyway. I'm not selling that. We're talking films.
Yeah.
Love films.
Yeah.
But I do still... I keep a log of every film I see, write every single one down.
Interesting.
In the back of my diary.
Right.
Number them, try and see... I think anyone who... Well, I often talk to people about films and they go, I wish I knew every film I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I could list... I wish I knew how many films I'd seen. And I was like, oh, I should start. So, like, 6 years ago, I started writing every single one down.
How many have you watched in the last 6 years?
I tend to see... It's dwindled. This is how I know I see less. I think it was around... I'd see new films, this is.
Yeah.
As in ones I haven't seen before. I'd probably see about 110 a year. Something like that. And now it's around 60-something. Mm. Which is all right.
Not bad.
Think about the week. It's like one, just over one a week.
Yeah.
But I still love it. But I do find that... I find myself waiting for the sort of November to February period now, where they're all the good ones. Although this year I'm not that taken, if I'm honest. It hasn't been my favourite year. Don't know if this will go out this year. I'm talking about the beginning of 2019 and 2018. I'm going to put it in now. I'm never myself in stuff. So if my dulcet tones make people want to hit themselves in the head with a spade, just feel free to turn it off. I won't be offended.
I personally will be, as the guy whose podcast it is. I'd be annoyed if you turned it off.
All right, don't turn it off.
Fucking but dulcet if you're not gonna tones.
Sorry, I just
listen. I wasn't going to draw attention to it, but actually, ladies and gentlemen, this is a big deal because Jamie Dimitri, much like when I had Brian Gittins on, very rarely appears as himself, and it's a real honour that you have. And you're doing so well.
Thanks, I'm scared. But I do... I've done it a few times as myself, but I'm technically not myself because I'm a puddle of scared on the chair, whereas I feel quite chill.
Oh! What? Oh, I've forgotten to tell you.
What's happened?
Oh, fuck. Oh, I should have told you when you got here.
Do you want to turn the thing off and tell me?
Oh, God.
Do you want to turn
the... No, I may as well keep recording. God. No. I should have told you when you got here. It's so bad.
Oh, my God.
I think you're going to be... Oh God,
well, I'm glad it's you that's telling me, because, you know...
God, I'm so sorry. I'll just say it. I guess I'll just say it. Oh, fuck. I don't know how to word it.
Oh, he's on the floor.
I haven't even put it into a sentence. Well, I guess I was going to say it.
Don't take your clothes.
You died. You died.
Exqueeze.
You died. I'm so sorry. How did you die?
Well, everyone was smashing around, and I got caught up in it.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Everyone was whacking around, bro.
Everyone was just whacking around?
Everyone was whacking around, and it was a big hubbub.
Yeah.
And it nicked my head.
What were they whacking?
The hubbub, it nicked my...
You got killed in a hubbub?
Well, someone tweeted something, and everyone got... Everyone was up in arms about the tweet, and they were smashing around because everyone was so unhappy about the tweet.
Yeah,
and I went out to see what was going on. I got caught, and someone nicked my head.
Oh God!
And yeah,
Just out.
It wasn't my tweet. No, I don't know what it was about. It's, oh, God. But I get it. When someone tweets something that isn't something that I think, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
What about tweeting something that I agree with?
Yeah.
And then I get out and I...
You start whacking around.
Yeah, but I wasn't aware of this. So yeah, got it.
You hadn't checked Twitter that hour.
Yeah.
So you're just like, what's all the hubbub? You went outside, got with people whacking around.
Yes, and what happens to my head?
Nicked.
Someone nicked me in the head with their...
You were nicked.
Someone was swinging their hubbub, their whacking,
hullabaloo,
smashing around, and I nicked my head.
What a hullabaloo. Killed by a hullabaloo.
Yeah.
Wow, fucking hell, that's...
I agree. I stand... I get it, though. Don't tweet if you're not tweeting what everyone thinks.
Come on, guys.
Well, make sure everyone agrees, and then let's get it out there.
Yeah. And unless you want random deaths like this one.
Yes.
Are you scared of death?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you not?
Yeah. No.
What's not to be scared of?
Some people aren't scared of it, or they don't think about it.
What, religious men?
No, I think religious people are scared of it because a lot of...
Oh, hence the religion, yeah.
Yeah, why they have... I better be good.
Oh, I mean, I worry about talking about this because I might not be able to think about films. I mean, and I am dead, so what's there to be scared of?
Yeah,
apparently,
yeah.
Death just looks like a chilled-out dude's living room filled with film posters and a couple of glasses of water.
What do you think about it like a lot?
I try not to, Brett.
Now's the time.
I feel like I'm thinking about it quite a lot now. Considering I am dead.
Yeah.
Well, I always knew that when I died, I'd go, all right, let's get this film podcast done.
Yeah.
And then,
then
I'll settle into death.
Yeah. I've got one last thing to do.
Or one first thing to do.
Put your affairs in order and tell your family you love them. No. I promised Brett I'd do his podcast.
But wait, but I've already died.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's getting their affairs in order once they're dead. They're going straight to the film podcast.
Yeah, thank you. This is the front door to death.
Yeah, man.
So... You worry about death, you don't like to think about it.
I think, right, I'm going to try and say this without thinking about it.
Okay.
I think the big realisation,
mm-hmm.
Oh God, I mean, almost definitely cut this because it's a bleak thing to talk about, is I always considered the idea, like, you know, I'm considering myself agnostic, like I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I assume there's nothing after. And when you really can conceive of the idea of nothingness,
yeah,
because when you think of nothingness, you think of like a dark room.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're sat in like solitary confinement or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh crap, I can't see anything. But it's like, no, not even that. It's nothing. The idea of nothing is like minus. That when I realise that, I mean, I don't have testicles anymore because I thought that once.
Yeah. That's where they went.
Yeah. All eunuchs had that thought.
You know, I might have said this before, fuck knows. You know this, have you seen Gravity?
Yes.
You know the bit where Sandra Bullock gets sort of pushed and she starts spinning through space and just goes on and on. And if no one gets to her, she's just going to be spinning for eternity.
Yeah.
That's how I visualise the fear of nothingness. It's just spinning in a...
But isn't that somethingness, though? Because spinning is something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that to me is like, oh, God. Whereas nothingness is like, there's no oh, God to be said because you're just like... You're not even, you can't even, you're not like anything. It's just, and this is why we should be talking about it. Because the Pan's Labyrinth poster in your room is starting to look so much more terrifying. I wouldn't mind if this was what death was.
No.
Imagine if that was a universal thing. When you die, you go to comedian Brett Goldstein's living room and there's enough films in here to last you maybe 2 months. If you were to watch them consistently,
yeah,
that's
non-stop.
What you were going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that you and Paulie from The Sopranos? Or is that just Paulie from The Sopranos?
It's Paulie from The Sopranos signed to my auntie Andy.
Ooh, rooftops. Lovely, well done. Shout
out. I think it said, and no, it's all The Sopranos, and I think it actually says from Pussy Papazero.
Does Paulie not know who his character is?
Well, it's...
That's so funny. I feel like then those guys aren't 100% engaged with what they're doing. So
I'm also,
like, Tony signs it like, from the gangster character.
I also wasn't there when that signature was given, and it may have just been a random Italian American that my auntie approached.
Right.
With a photo. I'm pussy.
What's the significance of that tennis ball? Was that from the Wimbledon film?
Yeah, that's when I had Paul Bettany on.
And this carpet in the room is this from the carpet from Notting Hill?
Yeah, it's the carpet that Rissi fans comes in naked.
Ah, yes. And that doorknob, I assume is from Tyrannosaur by Paddy Considine.
No, but it's close. It's from Journeyman by Paddy Considine. It's the door handle that he...
I knew that was a Paddy Considine doorknob.
It had his fingerprints on it, you could tell.
this is a good game.
Hey, I've got good news for you. There isn't nothingness.
Well, what is there?
There's a heaven.
Oh, right, okay.
It's quite nice, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You into that?
What, am I into there being a heaven?
Yeah.
I'd love that.
All right, great. Well, good news, it's true.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people there. They're all fans of all six episodes of Starsplash Fest.
Absolutely not the case.
They watched them all day
one. No way.
People immediately tweeted.
People think the first one's too hectic. No one's watching the first one up in heaven. They want to relax.
Look,
they
don't episode want to see four a is a around. Classic. We're all agreed. No, everyone
people
loves
that's
it.
That's too unlikable in episode one up in heaven, and they don't want that up in heaven.
They love 1 to 6, and they're very excited about season two, even though they're never going to see it because you died. But you're going to tell them what the stories were, and it's going to be even better just getting it live. Anyway, the point is, what they really want to talk to you about in heaven is your life, but through films. Can you imagine that?
What a bunch of legends.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the first thing they want to know is, what's the first film you remember seeing? And was it at Video Vikings?
It's annoying that this is the first one, because it's the only one that I don't have a definite answer for. Do you definitely know the first film you saw?
I've really been thinking about it, and I think I do, but yeah, it's possible that there was... You know, I was only three.
But I think you know these things because your parents tell you.
Yeah.
And my parents don't remember anything about me when I was a kid. When I asked them what my first word was, it's not even like, oh, sorry, Jay. It's just like, I don't know.
I thought we were there.
There's not. I'm so sentimental about stuff like that. I have a vague memory of being stood outside the Odeon Barnet and seeing the Little Mermaid poster out front. But I can't remember if I was going in to see it or I just saw that poster. I can't remember being in the cinema watching it or not, which is really annoying. But I think it was that. The earliest memory I have of watching like a film that wasn't like a kid's film is Drop Dead Fred.
Oh, yeah.
I remember going to my cousin's house in Nottingham and repeatedly and always asking to watch that and being like, this is the funniest, maddest thing ever. It's like, it's quite scary in a weird way because he has no control.
And he's got no boundaries.
Yeah, it's like a gritty British version of The Mask.
Yeah.
Like, The Mask is like everything's sort of under control, I think, because he's got his catchphrases and stuff. It's like you know where you are. But yeah, Rick Mail is, I mean, he could sort of like smash your TV screen through, come into your living room and like rub his ass on your face. Like that, you feel like he could do anything.
That's so true.
Because it's all about that film's all about not losing that like mad side of yourself as a kid, but not mad as in like cheeky, mad as in like if you were to apply the things that a kid did to an adult, it would be quite upsetting.
Yeah, that's such a good reference. Like The Mask, the difference in The Mask is he would slide down a banister and like jump off in a cool way, drop dead friendly, slide down the banister, knock his testicles on the end of it.
Yeah, and then maybe like, they'd come off and he'd have to put them back on sort of thing. And you probably see them.
Yeah.
He's amazing in that film. Just like such a force of whatever he is.
Proper chaos.
Yeah. But that to me, and I remember it because there was a lot of, I think I probably spent a lot of my younger years wanting to be cool and have seen things before people. And I think that was probably the first example. I remember going to school and being like, it was a 15 as well, which is a huge deal. So I was probably like
14.
When would that have been? I mean, I was like, I think I may have been like 7 or something. I'm 31. Yeah. But I remember being at school and being like, I've seen Drop Dead Fred, actually, at the end of the day. Cutting a long story short. So whatever, make of that what you will. And I remember a boy in my class going, no, you haven't, because I saw it at my cousin's house. And I was actually, as well as being a show-off, I was very sensitive. So I was like, actually, no, you're right. If that's the case, then there's no way I've seen it. That boy now, I think, is in jail. So fair enough.
Is he?
That's what you get for being an arsehole to me. I think he stole a load of cars.
Is that true?
Yeah. Can't find him on Facebook.
No,
so I assume.
In jail.
Yeah. or on any sort of social media. I've trawled, mate. Want to see if Drop Dead Fred's in his list of favourites and if he has actually seen it. The prick.
He uses that as his headshot.
But yeah, I think those are my first ones.
So you saw that on telly?
They had it on video. It was like one of their... You know when you used to go to someone's house as a kid and there was nothing to do because there's no like games console or anything, and you're sort of sick of just playing, generic playing, like, let's play. Do you remember playing? It was just nothing.
Yeah, what was it?
It was just like... just sort of running around and laughing. Okay, what do you want? No, what do you want to play? Come on, you know the one. And then you just sort of run around and go, but I'm the mum. And that's... No, but that's home. And that's home, that's home, that's home. And then I've put this on my head and that's... No, but this toy's going to die. Watch. Ah! You're like, what? Wait. What are we doing?
What is the premise of this play?
Okay, what films do you have? And they go... there'll be one weird one. You're like, I've got Mother Goose's football. Like, all right. And then there's like a home video. You're like, or like one of the dad's video. So he's got like Quadrophenia or something.
Yeah. And like, Rambo.
Yeah. And it's terror. And you're like, they're smoking. No, they're smoking on the cover. No. And then the other one, the last one will be like, Drop Dead Fred, and it like silly man on the front cover, so we'd watch that. But yeah, I mean, there were films like I'd watch obsessively as a kid, and I can't work out whether it was because like Home Alone, fanatically obsessed,
right?
Like I just watch it just with my tongue out for like 50 hours and then go to sleep and then another 50 hours. Loved that. I remember being so taken by the Lion King trailer that before it had come out, I had a Lion King themed party. I didn't even know if the film was good. I was like, get me all the merch. We're all dressing as animals from The Lion King because it is going to be the best film. And then I went to see it like 2 weeks later and I was just nodded the whole way through like, yep, it is the best film I've ever seen. Such an idiot.
I called it at my party
like that.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's as good as I thought it would be. Brilliant. I'm glad I got all this just carrying on my Lion King pencil cases and Ben pencils inside. Like, yes.
What's the film that scared you the most?
As a kid, I just rejected being scared as a thing. I was never like a daredevil in that sense. I was never excited by the prospect of being scared.
Right.
It's like, being scared is a bad thing. Like, people would be like in the playground, like, it all started with sleepovers, didn't it?
Yeah.
So people were going to have a sleepover and we watch a scary film. And someone would be like, we're going to watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And they would be like, oh my God. And like whispering about it in the playground. Like, well, the teacher's going to give you a detention because at home you're going to watch a film. It's an 18, you know, it's an 18. I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to come. Like, equally, like, suspect, like that.
Like it was cool.
I'm actually not going to. Yeah, like it's cool. I'm not going to come to that because it sounds so scary.
Yeah. Wait, guys, yeah. Not for me.
Yeah. So that's going to, like, that'll make me so scared. So probably not, man. All right, nice one. Put my shades on and leave. But yeah, that, you should say it's an 18. Well, there's no way I can watch that because I'm 10 and I'm going to obey the rules here.
I saw Drop Dead Fred when I was too young and it's kept me up for life.
I remember asking my friend Patrick what he was going to watch at the sleepover to be like, we're not going to watch anything scary, are we? Because if not, if we are, I won't come. So that'd be annoying for me because I'll be terrified. I'm the one who doesn't like nightmares. Why does everyone like nightmares? And he's like, no. And I got there and the dad was like, kids, guess what we're watching? And pulled out The Exorcist. I think we were 11 and I was like, oh. In fact, I do remember at another party, someone saying we're going to watch Nightmare on Elm Street and I went home.
I think it's interesting that you're, but you were like brave enough. I think that was very brave.
I think I made an excuse and left. I was like, oh, I forgot my... Because, well, I mean, what do you have on at the age of like 12? I was like, oh, God, no, yeah.
My wallet.
So my mum's at home and she's so nice. And I love spending time with her, so I've probably got to see this evening. Oh, Christ. Because if I'm here, that means I won't be having as nice a time as I'll be having with my mum. All right, I'm going to go home. I'd need to go. Yeah, that's this evening as well that I do that, and every other evening. So, wait. So there was that, but then they whipped out The Exorcist, and I was like, I can't do that again because I think I've been really taking the piss out of.
Mm.
And they watched The Exorcist, and I sat with my back to the screen for the whole thing.
So you heard The Exorcist.
What do you think of me, Brett, after all this? I'm hearing what I'm saying, and I sound like a wet nothing.
No, listen, what I think is impressive and where I don't understand, like, from the difference between our childhoods and maybe is it takes some balls to not go along with what everyone was doing. To go, I'm going home. No, I'm not coming to your horror thing. I'd be like, who's this fucking tough guy?
I think you're picturing a straighter spine.
Mm.
It was very much like I would, like a puddle of water, and the house is on a slant, and I just sort of like dribble out of that.
So no one would notice.
Yeah.
Was Jamie ever here? It was like that.
Yeah. I mean, I was about 6'15" when I was when I was that age, so it was definitely noticeable. And my nose was most of that.
So you've not seen a scary film?
No, so I have, yeah, right. So
what's your answer?
I think The Witches used to really scare me.
Oh, yeah. Great.
And I think that's probably because it wasn't like an 18 or anything, so it was one that I would have watched.
Yeah.
And I think that it would probably scare me till today.
Yeah.
Because I think that I came to learn that those films that I didn't want to watch probably wouldn't have scared me because gore just does absolutely nothing for me. I don't receive it when I watch it. I just don't. It doesn't. More often than not, because I don't really care about the characters. I kind of think that like existential crises scare me more. So like in The Witches, is that it's like the boy turning into a mouse or a rat, and just it's like. Well, oh gosh, that is hell.
Yeah,
and it's that thing of there being no, and the girl getting trapped in the picture, and the family don't know where she's gone, and she's just in the picture, and it's that voicelessness that always scared me so much. Mm. And I think that, and I'm so influenced by it, like that short film, the one I'm trying to make. It's about a guy turning into a car.
Yeah.
It's all about a really horrible thing happening, and you going like. Oh, come on, someone be sympathetic about this. Please, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. Why isn't anyone saying anything about it? And it's like, she's so close to being fine because if they were to see her in the picture, then maybe they could get her out. And that used to ruin me. I'd be like, I couldn't think about it.
Mm.
I couldn't think about it. But more recently, I was sort of delighted to have a cinema experience where I was like, that officially terrified me. Have you seen Suspiria?
Yeah.
I was contorting. I was so scared.
Great.
I was so happy to be so affected by something.
The new one we're talking about, the remake.
I haven't seen the original, which I'm sure is sacrilege. But I thought it was one of the best things I've ever seen. It's been a bit panned, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a real, like, you're either going to love it or not, because it's mad.
I went to see it with my friend Phoebe in the Vista in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And it finished, and she went, what do you think? And I screamed. I was so on edge that just someone, a woman especially, talking to me. I was like, I jerked and, like, kicked the chair. Oh, no, wait, I remember jerking. I remember being absolutely terrified when she said it.
Hang on, she's
dead. But then I went into the toilet, and someone, like, slammed a cubicle door, and I, like, headbutted the wall. I was so on edge for ages and terrified that I was going to have nightmares. It was brilliant. That scene in the, I won't give anything away, but that scene in the dance studio.
Yeah, the dance scene is
unbelievable. And I think it's because there's no CGI. Those raw materials really have so much more of an impact.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I think your brain... I think that graphics have got to a point now that we don't need to talk about the quality of graphics. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember it's like, oh, the graphics in that were brilliant. See the graphics in Jumanji? It's all the bloody lines are going to bloody bite my bloody head off. But now it's just like, it's a blanket. Like, yeah, graphics are good. Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
But I think that no matter how good they get, in the back of your mind, you won't
connect to it.
You won't connect to it, no.
I hate CGI. I hate it. Always.
It's like a great example is the difference between the original Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Tim Burton could have made those sweets like float in front of your face, but the sort of texture of them in the original, I can still, even though you watch it. The old one now, and you're like, oh, that's a rubber ball. You're still like,
but it's there.
I'm going to bite it.
Yeah, it's there. They could touch it.
Whereas the sweets in the new one, you're like, it's just nothing. It's like, you're looking at a hologram.
I think I often want to sort of like say to Hollywood, I don't think your CGI is as good as you think it is. Because I keep watching stuff going, well, it looks like it, I mean, it still looks like a computer, though, right? Yeah. And everyone's going, oh, it's amazing. And I was going, amazing watching computer things jump about.
Yeah, totally.
But, like, where's... I'd much rather a bad puppet
completely,
that's there in
yeah,
the room.
Because it's commitment to the thing. Because no one's going, oh, that's not real. It's like, yeah, and we know it's not real. We're not supposed to think it's real. Although, saying that, The Jungle Book was on TV over Christmas and Mowgli sat on Baloo's tummy. I mean, the new Jungle Book.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad was like, what? Are they brothers? And he's seen it before.
What are they, brother? The boy, why isn't it scratching him?
But I also, Pacific Rim was on TV the other day.
Yeah.
And we flipped past it and someone was like, this is actually amazing. I mean, it's been, kind of is actually amazing. So we like stopped to watch a bit of it. And like, there's these huge monsters and contraptions like jumping around and like huge. And I was like,
but how is
it that this is happening in front of us? We are watching gigantic monsters and like robots like destroying a city, and everyone's just like, that. It's good, isn't it? It's like if you'd shown that to someone, and I mean, it's the I guess it's my dad's generation who like sees stuff on a screen and are like,
what? Oh no!
Little Mowgli, get off it! It's a bear.
That whole town, the whole city is fucked.
Okay, so Suspiria, that's your answer.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term programme. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Great answer.
Yeah, sorry. These are long answers, aren't they?
No, it's great.
So many anecdotes.
What is the film... I think this could be a lot of answers given how sensitive you are. What's the film that made you cry the most?
I'll try and limit this to a short one.
You can have as long as you like.
I thought about this and I think that... The one that's probably made me shed the most tears across my life is Hook. Every time Hook is on, I can't. I think it's just like, it's that thing of growing up. It's like the end of Toy Story 3. Mm. Anything to do with growing up kills me. Hook is also to do with growing up because I loved it so much as a kid. And Robin Williams was such a huge part of why I wanted to do what, you know, he's like the first, he's probably the first like comedy presence that made me want to do what I do for a living. And yeah, it's just, I just think it's an, it's just an assault on the senses, the color and like the motifs and everything. It's just, it's just palpable. Like everything is so scary and beautiful and the performances are amazing. And Dustin Hoffman is just the best in it. There's something about like, even like the bit where Hook's wig comes off.
Yeah.
It's so provocative for some reason, but it's probably because of me being a kid. And that whole, the sequence where they imagine the food at the table and they have the food fight, it's that Willy Wonka thing. It's like you can taste it and you still know, just everything about it is just wonderful. And I audibly cry, I like scream cry when I watch it.
Yeah, that's
just comfortably sat watching TV screaming.
Your dad go, what?
Yeah, he doesn't get why it's mad.
Why is Doubtfire flying?
I have said this before, so maybe we'll have to cut it, but it depends if people don't listen to every episode. But I think the setup of Hook, it's some of Spielberg's best work. The whole build-up when they get to London, when they go to Maggie Smith's house, she stands by the bed. So you've become a pirate, Peter. I love that shit. And I think it's really beautiful and scary and moving when they do the speech at the Great Ormond Street and all the old men stand up, all the old orphans stand up and go to kiss her. And then the windows suddenly open and all the snow comes in. Fuck,
it's so fraught. The whole thing is like the tension is just so constant because of like your thing. Like they turn Peter Pan into this like tragic drama.
Yeah.
Like the fact that she grew up to be Maggie Smith and she lost her youth is like, and not, you're like crying from the beginning. Just everything about it is like, oh, God.
Yeah.
But it's like crying, being scared, all those things. I think are the makings for me of the best films. Like whenever someone says to me, like, I remember whenever I talk to someone about a film and they're like, I go, oh, this is amazing. Like, Schindler's List is amazing, isn't it? And I go, oh, God, no, it's shit. I'll be like, shit. I'll be like, yeah, it's so depressing and sad. I'm like, if it depressed you, then it was successful, wasn't it?
It did its job.
When I went to see The Sixth Sense, I remember as a kid, this is the biggest impact a film's ever had on me. Yeah. I mean, it's more to do with something else. When the twist is unveiled, I turn around and threw up on my mum. Projectile. I was like, he's a what? I had, weirdly, there was a promotion going on where they were giving, you could get 3 dime bars for the price of 1, and I just scoffed them all. And a dime is, you don't know how much sweetness there is in a dime. I just like...
It's crystal sweetness.
I ripped on her, and she just took it because she knew, she got it. She was like, yeah, it's a big twist.
Neither of us saw that coming, to be fair.
Yeah, but I think...
Are you comfortable crying in front of people?
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, in front of... Because of films?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally. Who cares? Really? Yeah. Isn't it? I don't know. It's this sort of...
That's nice.
Equivalent problem to being ashamed of, like, not having a spicy curry in front of someone. Do you know what I mean?
See, that's what I mean. You're a brave... But you've told all these stories, like, oh, I'm a scared weakling, but you cry in front of people, you say, I'm not watching that scary film.
But are you scared?
You're one of the toughest guys I've ever met.
Is this why you go to the cinema on your own all the time?
Yeah. Because I if I'm going to have a cry, I don't want people seeing. Not fucking.
I love going to the cinema on my own, but not because of that. Just because I don't have to worry about anyone else's opinion of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I bumped into Brett in the Arclight in LA, and I was going to see Black Panther, and he was going to see whatever was on, I think.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you should come and see this with me. And he's like, I mean, we get on, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, no. I'm going on my own. I was like, oh, but I'm... All right.
I said,
we're going about the same time. You want to see Black Panther? Oh, yeah, definitely. I will definitely see that.
Didn't we decide we'll see it half an hour apart and then meet up afterwards?
Yeah, we did. But I don't think that happened. I don't know what happened.
I think we did. I saw it. Oh, I saw something else and then we met afterwards.
Oh, yes, we did. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
So it wasn't... It was like genuinely not to avoid you. I don't know, but
there was a moment where I was like, okay, so I'm just going to head in. I'm just going to head in and see that then. But I do like going on my own.
Yeah, but suddenly it's like, I've never understood it. It's not a social thing. I mean, come on.
I completely agree. By the way, I'm not. I got why you wanted to see it on your own. Like I said, like I do it all the time for script stuff. Yeah. And also, I like to go and see like 3 films in a day on my own. That's like my perfect day. Perfect. Just back to back. Don't need to worry about anyone else's schedule. Just do it. Or sometimes I'll be like, someone will go, oh, I want to see that. And I'll just text them what my schedule is and be like, you can meet me for one of them if you want. Because I leave my phone at home.
Do you?
Yeah, when I do an all-dayer. Because but I mean, I've heard you say it on this before. The best thing about being in the cinema is it's like, this is a time for me to have nothing to do with my phone. I mean, I'd love to have nothing to do with my phone ever, but I'm addicted in one way or another, every New Year's resolution for the past 5 years has been cut it in half with a pair of scissors, but I just can't.
I've started to think that what Twitter is Twitter is a thing that gives us all mental health problems, which has resulted in everyone tweeting about mental health problems. And then all Twitter now is links to people who use Twitter writing articles about how their mental health is affected by Twitter.
Right, yeah.
And we all, it's just this self-perpetuating machine of...
Oh, totally, yeah. I think my
I mean, I'm weeks away from writing my mental health tweet.
Right, yeah. I mean, when I started out, I justified it by being like, yeah, but I'm only going to be ironic about it all the time. Mm. And I still am, I think, about it, but I'm like, it comes to a point where you're like, well, I am on it.
Yeah.
And the amount of times
and I am depressed. Write, like,
yeah. There comes a time where I want to write a sort of, every now and again, I want to write a holier than now tweet, being like, oh, sort of like, oh yeah, this is great, isn't it? Everyone is saying things on Twitter. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
It's such an embarrassment, the whole thing.
It's really bad.
What even, what is it? I mean, trying to explain it to someone like pre-internet or even pre-social media. I remember when it first came out, I was like, how is this going to... I don't get what it is. Mm. How is this going to catch on? Just saying things quickly. It's like, I just... What? The worst thing about it for me is that it's... And this is relevant to films, I think. I think it's just completely abolished the idea of the magic of celebrity. I know that celebrity isn't like a wondrous thing, but I think it sort of was in a way. Mm. When I was a kid, I remember being like, God, I wonder what Matthew Perry's up to right now.
Yeah, now you know.
And now it's like, I always know what the people who are my heroes are up to. And more often than not, they're up to being on Twitter all the fucking time.
Yeah.
That's why I want to ease myself off. It's why I sort of, like, am a bit scared to do stuff with myself a lot of the time. Because I'm like, I kind of, like, the idea of... I'm like, just practice what I preach, basically. It's like, if I'm going to be on TV, I like the idea of just being my characters.
Do you know why I changed... I used to be like this, and it's one of the reasons I thought, fuck it, and started doing a podcast and stuff, is because of Kevin Spacey. Because Kevin Spacey used to say a lot, I think to be the best actor, you should have no public profile. You shouldn't do interviews. You should be a mystery so that people can just see you as an actor. And then we found out, you had a good reason for saying that, Kevin. Yeah. And it made me think, nah, fuck it.
Oh, for sure. But you were also a stand-up, so you've been being yourself as a performer for a long time. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with an actor doing it, just for my own personal preference. Yeah. I'm like, but then I really just, I enjoyed stuff like this.
Yeah,
like it's lovely, you know. Just and I think I've always been obsessed with the idea of lists and what are the best restaurants, what are your favorite restaurants, what are your favorite things. This is like the dream. Yeah,
we all just need to collect our lists together and then we could go.
Yeah.
What is the film that most people don't like? It's critically not acclaimed. People don't like it, but you're like, fuck you all. This film is great.
I just don't know if I have one.
Okay.
Oh, actually, do you know what?
Yeah.
Talladega Nights.
Okay.
I don't know why it got any negative press. I think it's one of the funniest films ever made. It's like, it's a sprawling improv-a-thon, but it is, like, fucking funny. And so it's a film where Sacha Baron Cohen's, like, acting
that
I think is really, really good. I think he's so good in it. And I think that Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly are, like, on... like the height of their career.
I think it came, it was sort of at the point of like saturation in terms of like critical. I think it got negative press in terms of like that sort of thing had been popular for a bit and then it was time for the backlash rather than it was bad.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Oh, another one of these.
Yeah, like Step Brothers didn't do that well critically, but it's also so funny.
Yeah, very funny.
I mean, those films aren't like, you know, they're classic. I mean, Will Ferrell released like however many films about. A guy in the public eye who was at the top of his game and then fell from grace and then picked back up again. And that's sort of fine because they were just platforms for his... I think
he's really good
so at it. Funny.
Yeah.
And him and John C. Reilly have such a great thing going on. Maybe that's my answer. But it's a weird one, isn't it? Because it's like, I don't know when I started knowing about... I think people who like films assume that everyone is aware of what the critical response to stuff is.
Yeah.
But it's so funny how not the case that is. Like, didn't Vin Diesel, like, make a huge bet that Fast and Furious 7 was going to win Oscar for Best Film?
Did he really?
Yeah, I read that. Like, I think people sort of... Like, I had a friend who was convinced that Taken was considered, like, one of the all-time classics, like, alongside Schindler's List and stuff. Like Shawshank Redemption, Taken. I remember I was once on a shoot and I heard some essays having a chat and I was eavesdropping. Mm. And there was one who'd become like the alpha. By essay, I mean an extra, the modern day
supporting
artist.
Is that what you're saying? Supporting artist.
Yeah. Not like a Mexican friend. My essay.
Not your homework.
Yeah. And I heard them having a chat, and there was like an alpha among them being like, well, you know what's going to win the Oscar for Best Film this year, don't you? And they're like, oh, God, yeah. No way, what? What is it? Well, what film this year has had suspense, action, crying, romance, comedy, graphics? It's Pompeii. I don't even remember Pompeii, but it was critically voted the least likely film to sort of do more than £1 at the cinema. It was like, I think it was like voted one of the worst films of all time. And this guy had seen it and been like,
crying.
Yeah, loving it. Wait, that, right, okay.
It's a good list, to be fair, of what you want in an Oscar film. Tension, crying, drama.
I like the idea of, those are the genres.
Got any crying films?
But yeah, I think there's not a lot of people sort of know what are objectively seen as. Well, there is no objectively good film, I suppose. I try and divide it into just derivative and non-derivative. I think derivative stuff you can say is objectively bad. It's like, that is shit because it's been done to death and this isn't a good example of being done. But I think with actors as well, like when people are like, their performance was fucking shit, I hate her, I hate him. Like, they didn't do it on purpose. They didn't turn up and rub their hands together and go, guess what, I'm going to do this shit. Like, everyone's just trying, you know.
Yeah, God bless him.
Yeah, man.
What's the film that you used to love it so much, and you watched it recently and you've gone, oh dear, that does not hold up for me?
Again, I don't think I have an official proper one for this, because I think that the nostalgia that you have for films you watched a long time ago tends to stand up because you enjoy it for a different reason. I really used to love What Dreams May Come and Patch Adams.
Yeah. Oh, not Patch Adams, but What Dreams May Come.
That was my mum's favourite film, but I have a feeling if I watched it now, I'd be like, this is hokum.
What Dreams May Come was a really badly reviewed film at the time. And I think about that film a lot in terms of like, what a fucking wild...
Beautiful
and mad and dark, so dark. The story is a man dies, and then the woman kills herself to be with him, and then she's in hell.
Well, the woman and the kids die, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they all die, and then someone kills themselves, and he's got to go to hell to get her back. She's killed herself.
The kids die, and then she kills herself because she doesn't want to live without them, and then he dies.
Yeah, and then he crosses heaven to get to hell to try and get her back.
Yes, she got because into if hell you kill yourself, you go to hell, yeah.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. is an angel.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's, like, fields of yellow you can jump about in.
And the idea is heaven is hell. Whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
I guess it probably was good. I just think I loved it so much. It was my mum's favourite film.
Really?
And I think...
She's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, she's got less of a Greekness going on about her. But she, yeah, I think I loved it via her. I was like, oh, my mum thinks this is brilliant. But Patch Adams, I just loved Robin Williams in anything he did. But I think if I watched Patch Adams now, I'd be like, this is Schmaltztown, Tennessee. Yeah,
I think I found Patch Adams uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There was something, I like a soppy film, but I think there's something sort of a bit creepy about Patch Adams.
It's a true story, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's something a bit creepy about the real Patch Adams.
About a guy who started his own hospital with low fees, but he'd be a sort of prankster in there. Yeah. It was sort of like if Jimmy Savile started a hospital.
Yeah, I think there's the
absolutely not. It's nothing like that. But it's I don't know, I loved it at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a family favourite for some reason.
That's a good answer. Patch Adams, I worry, would not hold up for you. Yeah. And perhaps you shouldn't watch it.
I'll take that.
My favourite question. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself. Film that might not even be that good. But because of the memory you associate with that film. Might have been a first date you went to when you saw that film. Might have been the day someone died. Might have been a job you just got.
Mm.
What's the film you'll always go, that film means this to me?
I think the thing is that this one I haven't actually seen that many times, and I think I probably haven't because of this. But Papillon,
yeah,
because
Steve McQueen.
Yeah, and Dustin Hoffman. I think it's because I probably couldn't even tell you that much about it.
Yeah.
But it's a rare film in my life that I sat with my dad and we watched all of it together and we both went, I love that. Because he's a lot older and he's, as dads tend to be, we're not the same age. No, he's nearly 80 now and he doesn't, weirdly doesn't have the best grasp of English. Well, he does. He speaks fluent English, but he just has a very Greek sensibility and doesn't quite engage. He doesn't know how to engage with something unless someone gets shot in the face in the first 5 minutes, basically. And for some reason, we both just fell in. And it's just a sad thing. So we can never. It's such a love. Like, I love films so much, and so does he. Like, he will just sit and watch telly all evening, every evening. But he will watch Shat. Just like, if it's the worst thing ever made, it officially becomes his favourite film of all time. Like,
what's his favourite film?
Oh God, I actually asked him this over Christmas, and he just didn't give me an answer. I think he used to love. He always was Mutiny on the Bounty. I'm like, what? Like, that's him remembering.
Yeah, that's
I don't a good think film. That's like he just watches FBI files like back to back.
Bloody, he shot him. Why?
But I tell you what, actually, I mean, for example, like, over Christmas, every Christmas we have like it's such a rigmarole finding a film. I mean, hence why I loved watching this Papillon Memory so much. Yeah. Finding a film that we can all sit and watch and enjoy and get to the end of and be like, that was brilliant. It's an equation that doesn't bear thinking about. So me and Tash, my sister, Natasha Dimitriou, so we'll put our heads together, be like, what should it be? And this year we went... Tash came up, which was like Murder on the Orient Express. I'm like, oh my God, perfect.
Great idea.
Murder mystery, everyone get on board that. Someone gets killed very quickly. Why? He's always shocked. It's like he wants it to happen.
There was a murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah. I mean, this is about to get very weird, the story I'm going to tell.
Okay.
So we put it on, we're like, oh, it's got Murder for Dad, Judi Dench for Mum, she loves her. We'll be like, oh, lovely. Yeah. And then me and Tash... Yeah, we'll be like, fine, doesn't matter what we like. 10 minutes in, Mum's asleep, Tash is on her phone, my dad looks so confused, and I'm just not enjoying it, because for whatever reason. And I'm like, oh, God, we didn't succeed. And I look over to him, and I'm like, Dad, like, so I don't want to put him through it. I'm just like, you not really enjoy it, are you?
I don't really understand what's happening, if I'm honest. They're on a train, yeah?
I'm like, yeah. They're on a train. Do you want to change the channel? He's like, please. So I like look around for the remote. I'm like, oh, fuck, I couldn't find the remote. And he's sort of stuck watching this thing. And I find it eventually. And I change the channel. Mm-hmm. And we changed to Steven Spielberg's BFG. So the live action one. And it's like scene where it's like magic. Like he's like in his cave holding the little girl, sucking a dream out of an arse or whatever happens in that film. And my dad's face lights up like a little bit. Ooh, look at his colours. And he's sort of watching it like, oh God. And after about 10 minutes, I can see that the sort of light starts to fade. I just like to watch him watching films. The light starts to fade. He's like, what? And I'm like, you're right. He goes, if I'm honest, I'm completely lost. I'm like, well, what do you want to know? He's like, is he a suspect? Is who a suspect? On the Orient Express? No. The 70-foot giant who has just blown a dream through a trumpet into a little girl's mouth or something while chewing on a cucumber made of worms, who, by the way, we just discovered has friends who are 800 foot tall, is not a suspect on the Orient Express. No. But I tell you what, if he was on the Orient Express, I know where I'd be pointing. No, it's not. So that is why I enjoyed Papillon so much, because he got it and he knew what was going on and it was just lovely. I mean, it's not the only one. There have been other ones, but they're a rocky road. Like, I used to be obsessed with American History X as a kid, thought it was the best thing ever. And I remember showing that to him, and until the horrific curb bit, he wasn't on board. As soon as someone does something horrific, he's like, oh, for God. It's a combination of like, he's incensed, but it gets him in.
Right.
It's like someone needs to punch him in the face to watch it. I mean, when he watches stuff that I'm in, he just like He'll like watch the wall instead. He makes up stuff that happened in staff.
Oh, really? Like what?
And I'll be like, what's your favourite? But he'll like piss himself laughing.
The bit where he goes up to the toilet and he's saying, this thing, bloody stinks of shit.
Right.
You can put that in series two?
Well, I mean, it would fit in. Like, what? You're laughing at it as well. Sorry, right.
What is the film that you found the sexiest? What's the sexiest film, Jamie?
I actually don't know the answer to that one. I think that Almost Famous is a very sexy film. As in everyone's sexy in it. Just the whole thing of that band being on tour. It's just the whole... I remember being devastated that I wasn't one of those people in that film. Annoyed that you're I wasn't furious. A sexy rock star in the 70s and that weren't. I wasn't being dismissive to a journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's my hard answer.
Okay.
I was just like, I just think it's such a good film as well.
You thought, I wish I could sing Tiny Dancer on a bus with some other people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That scene is like, you want to be there, don't you? Do you like that film?
Yeah, we want to get on that bus.
Yeah, I want to get on that bus. I want to have
an after party. You want to jump off a roof?
I want to jump off a roof.
Into a pool.
I wanted to be the journalist and be ingratiated into their gang accidentally and be able to. I just wanted.
You wanted to lose your virginity to three groupies.
No. No, I would have wanted something more stable than that. No, that part I fast forwarded.
Yeah, no, right. Good man.
The jeans and all that stuff. That's what I wanted. I was like, this is a pure, like, this is the essence of cool, and I want part of it, mate.
There's a subcategory to this question that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. It's called Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons.
Right.
And it's a film that you found sexy or arousing and perhaps thought, maybe I shouldn't have. Might have been the Lion King trailer.
I don't think I... This is so... Did you come up with that?
It sort of came out of Nat Metcalf, when Nat Metcalf was
right.
Because he had two answers and one of them was Troubling.
Right.
Troubling Boner, and then I stuck with it. And sometimes it does...
I think you latched onto it because I think you exclusively have Troubling Boners.
Every boner is troubling to
Yeah, me. I don't think that you're...
I've never had a non-troubling boner.
Yeah, for sure. But I think there is something in the idea of there being no non-troubling boners.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm... Honest.
Yeah.
Like, as a teenager, films like Mean Girls and Mean Girls, I was probably too old, I was like 15 or something, and then like American Pie and stuff like that, they did have a profound effect on me.
Yeah.
Like, you're like laughing, but you're like, oh my God, she's naked. Yeah. I think that is troubling because it's like, it's so, I don't know, it just gives you such a warped idea of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. The idea of like, I don't know, that just that whole culture of boys being like cheekily watching this girl stripping on a camera and being like, yo, this is cool. It's like horrible.
It's so weird, that sequence now in hindsight, the sequence of them filming.
Yeah, I just think it's
really dark.
I think it's troubling retrospectively. I wasn't troubled at the time, so I was just like, check out this roller coaster. I'm loving it. Life, teenage years. But yeah, looking back, I'm like, oh God, what was my understanding of anything, you know, I don't know. Although, you know, with all my sort of sensitivity, there is a word for it.
Yeah.
I probably was quite like, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
Poor girl.
And you've never fucked a pie. And that's fact.
I have never. Or a peach.
What is the film that you... Okay, it's a tricky one. What's the film you most relate to?
Well, I haven't actually seen it because I related to it so much that I couldn't get through it.
Okay.
And now I'm going to start this by saying I think that what I'm about to say is very cringe and wanky because I think if anyone else said, like when people do say like, oh, it was so affecting that I just like couldn't, I just couldn't, I just fucking couldn't. It's like someone trying to give themselves an affectation and make themselves interesting. Really not the case. I watched Adaptation.
Oh, love it.
I have seen it. I watched it as a teenager and I didn't get it. I was like 13 or 14 or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember being like, I got really into Kaufman. I mean, I'll get onto this, but Synecdoche, New York's best film ever made, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. But, I watched that and I was like, right, I've got to rewatch all of Kaufman. And then I bought that and I put it on and I watched the first 10 minutes and where he's having his internal dialogue. And I related to it so much that I freaked out, and but not related to it like, oh my God, they're thinking my thoughts. I was just like, it's really uncomfortable to hear the things that make me anxious out loud and remind me of them. I was like, I found it horrific.
Yeah.
And I was like, off. I was like, I'm not, why put myself through this? It wasn't like I'm going to be very clear about this. It wasn't like a oh my God,
no, kind of thing.
It was really just like, ah, shut up. No, I'm not having that. No way. Why would it? No. It's like, you know, I don't want to hear them out loud. Yeah. In my head. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great adaptation. I totally get that. But it's also, I think it's so, there is a thing, the reason you're uncomfortable with it is because he's doing the brave version of, this is what it's like to be a writer. Like, I think the sort of funniest thing, and I even hate to even say this myself, like I understand it, but he sits down to write and he has a wank, and then he goes back to write and then he has a wank, and it's like, that is brave to say that that is your writing process.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh yeah, that, yeah. I mean, that's the only thing that doesn't happen in the writing process is writing.
Yeah.
I've done everything in the world during the writing process. I've like bought a country.
Yeah, got married, divorced.
Yeah, will do anything.
Mm.
Like, I remember like colour coordinating my shirts in the cupboard. I mean, that's not even the maddest thing. I remember those things from when I saw it as a teenager. But I've never watched it because I kind of feel like you reset at like 18. And so you could watch all the films you've watched before you're 18 and it would be a new experience. Because, I mean, I watched Mrs. Doubtfire over Christmas, which, by the way, holds up so well.
Really?
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, there are some troubling things, as far as, like, God, this guy is dressed as a chica.
Right.
That's crazy kind of thing. Like, why would anyone do that? That's, you know. But I just think as a sort of classic family thing is structurally and comedically brilliant. But I understood like 70 jokes that I didn't
before. Right, interesting.
Because I watched it when I was so young.
So I think we're about to get to it, right? What is objectively the greatest film ever made?
Right.
Not necessarily favourite, what's the greatest?
Now, it's difficult to separate your favourite and the greatest.
Some people find it is, some people find it isn't. What I sort of mean by this is, for example, you mentioned like Schindler's List. Some people might say Schindler's is the greatest film. But I'd be surprised if it was your favourite.
Right.
Because you're not going, let's put Schindler's List
together. Of course, yeah. I think that my favourite is definitely Synecdoche, New York. That is like...
Right, so you've answered that question. Your favourite is Synecdoche, New York, which I fucking love.
Yeah, I've watched it maybe 40 times.
Yeah.
I can't... Because, you know, people are like, oh, it's very layered about films. It's literally layered in the sense that there are things like going on in the corner of the screen that that add a whole... Not like thematic... like narrative, like stuff going on that like adds to the narrative, like the guy, you work out that the guy's been watching him the whole time, he's been studying him,
and that the first scene is 3 months, you know, that the opening breakfast scene takes place over 3 months.
I didn't know that.
Do you know that? If you watch it 41 times, the beginning scene of him getting up and getting ready for work, and then watching it, if you like pay attention to what's happening on the news on the telly, is it's time is passing.
Oh my God, well there you go. I'm sick. But that I
no, you're not fit. I mean I think I read that and then watched it and was like, oh fuck.
But it's just unbelievable. I just think that everything about it, the way it's the perfect depiction of anxiety. It's like, I don't know how he did it. Just, it's so big. But I went to a talk with him. We didn't go together to watch a talk. Charlie Kaufman. I went to see him talk after a Q&A after Anomalisa.
Yeah.
And people were asking about it. Maybe I saw this thing on YouTube. Anyway, I saw him in a Q&A talk about it. And he's so... I think he's very proud of it. It's his only film that he directed and wrote. But he said that he feels like he's sort of fucked the independent film industry with it, because it was a rare... Because he'd become a rare sort of household name subversive independent filmmaker, and finances were like, as an experiment, let's fund the shit out of this Charlie Kaufman film and see how it does at the box office. Because, you know, with Eternal Sunshine and all that stuff, you know, he's starting to become he's a reason why people will go and see the film, which is so rare with a writer or a director in the grand scheme of things. But and it came out and it was the masterpiece that it should have been, but I think, like, no one went to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, for a start, it was called Synecdoche, New York.
The title was a mistake, and the length, it's off-putting that it's 3 hours or something.
Oh my God, but imagine if it was shorter. It is just...
Yeah.
It's just... I'm so intimidated and in awe of it.
And also, there's something about it. I was talking with someone the other day. You know this about it. You must know this because you're obsessed with it. That it started from... I don't know who the producer was, but some producer wanted to do like a horror anthology.
Right,
and they went to him and said, what would you do with a horror film? And that's what he wrote.
Yeah, there's a little passage about that in this. There's a book, the script book of it.
But
it makes complete sense.
Yeah, and it's fear of death and illness and
completely and being lonely.
Yeah,
and just like, and again, such a huge influence for me. Like, it's that.
Yeah,
my thing is like a cross between that and like a horror film, like that, because that I made that short.
Yeah,
not sort of boring talking about my own stuff, but just how much of an effect it had. Like, and it's funny that it was Sky Horror Shorts, that's why I made that thing. And my understanding of what a horror thing is something that just makes you feel sick with how, like, horrible a crisis the person is going through. Like, it's
and the thing that's so, that's like,
that sounds so wanky.
No, it's what you were here for, is the...
to wank.
Yeah. I'd say, come here and just wank on the sofa, please. Is that he... The whole film, he's obsessed with, I'm ill, I'm dying, I must have cancer, I must have this, I must have this. And in fact, he outlives everyone in the whole film. Every single person that he cares about, he is older than them and they all die. And he was never ill. He actually was incredibly well, but he could never. The whole film is this attempt to live in the moment and be present and be happy and be...
Yeah.
God, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know, I sort of didn't want to give that as my answer because I think it feels pretentious to say. I think because of the title, I think that there's contenders. Like, I think City of God and Shawshank Redemption are two of the best. Like, when I think of, like, the perfect, like, Hollywood film, The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
But when I think of, like, the best story told... Like, when, again, you think of, like, vastness and, like, a world, I think that City of God is, like, a phenomenal bit of work. Like, it's just ridiculous how much time it covers and how many great characters there are in it. And the way the narrative is so fractured but hangs together like nothing else. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That was my one I carried around with me as a teenager to be like, fucking watch this, mate. This is fucking cool, which makes me cool because I'm holding it. Although people always align themselves with stuff like that, especially as a teenager. It's like when you like a band, it's like, you never guess who I like, The Strokes. Therefore, you said it, everyone together, he's cool. He technically made that music because he likes it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Reservoir Dogs. You seen it? That was me at school.
You just, that sentence, I saw Reservoir Dogs.
At midnight. Sorry, at midnight.
That was your answer to when they called your name in the register. Okay, David, yeah. Peter, yeah. Brett.
I saw Reservoir Dogs at midnight.
What else?
So, that's a really good answer. I'm so happy with it because I fucking love that film and I've watched it a lot. And it's not easy, but I think why it might be definitely a contender for greatest. You're right, there's fucking so much in it. You could watch it 100 times and there's more and more and more.
And performances as well.
Yeah, and Diane Lord. Feast.
Oof. Yeah.
Oof.
I mean, Samantha Morton as well.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. I always love seeing a British person in in something that cool.
And there's a wonderful running sort of weird joke that they go looking for apartments and the estate agent. Shows around the house that's on fire.
It's always on fire.
And she goes, do you have any questions? She says, I'm slightly worried about the fire.
I'm slightly worried I might die in the fire.
Yeah.
There's that bit that's so funny in, they're in therapy, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Catherine Thingy.
Mm.
She's like, I want you to be completely honest with him. And she's
God,
she's like, I just can't stop thinking about like I found something she said something like I just find myself really frequently fantasizing about you dying.
Yeah.
And the therapist is like, and how does that make you feel? And he's like, yeah, so bad.
Yeah, and there's a line in it, and I forget that that's where it's from, that I think about, or maybe every day, and I always worry that this is what relationships are, that there's a scene quite early on where he and his wife are sort of having a chat, and he says something like, do you not love me anymore, or something like that, and she says, you know, it's not your fault. Everyone's disappointing once you get to know them.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's disappointing once you get to know them.
How,
oh.
And how true, though.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's so true. You always think about that. Like, I was talking to someone about that. I was out with someone yesterday who was saying that about, like, historical figures. You could deconstruct, like, that every hero probably was doing something a bit dodgy.
Mm.
Apart, I don't do anything.
Yeah, apart from you.
I don't do anything. I actually do nothing to avoid doing anything bad.
Don't like to be negative on this. What's the worst film ever made?
I don't think... with this answer, I will just spring to the first thing that springs to mind. And I'll also... I won't say my honest answer for it. I'll say... my worst experience of watching a film.
Okay.
When I was in Cyprus, I went on holiday to Cyprus with my sister.
Yeah.
And my dad palmed me off on a cousin of mine one evening. He's like, go out with, I won't say his name, go out with thingy. And the one cinema in Cyprus. When people ask me from Cyprus, oh, where does your, my dad used to live there. They go, where does your dad live? In Cyprus. I go, near the cinema. The whole of Cyprus.
Right.
Anyway, so my dad was like, go out with him this evening. He'd love to take you out. It's an odd guy, this guy. And we're in the car and the way there, he goes, what do you want to see then? And we're like, oh, God, I don't know what's on. And he goes, what do you want to see? Have you seen Three? Three? There's a film called Three. He's like, yeah, or Six. Like, what? A cinema? Are we going to like a cubist cinema? Don't even know what I mean by that. I don't know. And then we got to the cinema and on the posters, they're just massive numbers over the films.
Wow.
And there's and we overheard like loads of Greek people going, apparently Three is very good. have you seen One? And there are all these things like, I remember it was like My Super Ex-Girlfriend and Pirates of the Caribbean 2 or something. And we went up to the thing, and my cousin, before we'd even had a chance, he's at the till going, Four. Three tickets for Four, please. Which was The Lake House, starring
Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
And it's about a
time traveling.
Two people who live in the house about 100 years apart or something, and they find that they can send each other love letters. Yeah. And it was so boring and shit. Just like nothing. Like, just something I would never even... You know, there are certain shops that are near your house that you pass for 15 years and you just would never even know they exist unless someone's like, look at that now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a film that I would never even knew. It would have just come and gone and I would never have known, but somehow I was sat in there watching it. And my cousin left after 20 minutes to go, I'm just going to get a little coffee. Does anyone want a coffee? I'm like, you can go for a coffee? I know there's not a coffee shop in the cinema, so you're going to have to go to the shop.
During number four?
Yeah. So he goes for coffee, doesn't come back for an hour and 10 minutes, and then he comes back, and I'd like been trying to make myself go to sleep because I was so bored. And he comes back and he goes, what did I think? And I'm like, it's the worst film I've ever seen. He goes, really? I think it's quite good. And then when he dropped us off, he didn't drop us off at our house, he dropped us off on the motorway, just opened the door and went, okay, now. We were like, what? And then he went, hey, do you like fish? And I went, not really, no. And then he drove away.
And we never saw him again.
I'm not sure I did. Just crashed his car into a wall.
Do you like fish?
What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
The film I have watched over and over again is probably something like Speed when I was a kid, just chaining it. But I don't think I could do that over and over again now. Inglourious Basterds springs to mind. I just think Tarantino is... I know that he's got there's some questionable stuff floating around about him.
Yeah.
But I think that he is a stamp of quality to me. I just love everything he's ever made so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Inglourious Basterds is the height of that. I just think that if a film has quality dialogue mm-hmm. the whole way through, which is what defines his films, I think, more so than the blood and stuff. I think yeah. that it's just his very unique thing that no one else does. And it's like, people could try and imitate it, but it will never be dampened because you can't imitate it because it's just him mm-hmm. that does it. But yeah, Inglourious Basterds to me, it's just, yeah. Point I'm making is good dialogue, I think, doesn't get old. I think if the film is reliant on plot being shocking throughout, you can get bored because when you watch it again, it's like, well, you're not shocked by it anymore. But if the dialogue holds up the whole way through, like, and he's very masterful with that. I just think that also a unique take on war is welcome.
Yeah.
I know it's sad, it's crap. And I always worry about the morality of benefiting off of that stuff, but I guess the whole redemption aspect of it is quite refreshing and questionable.
It's all questionable, but it's really, in a way, in the end, I think, I don't know how I feel about it, I guess it's kind of silly, but it's also, as a film, it's really satisfying to see Hitler get killed.
Oh, yeah,
and totally. Like, it's a really like, yeah! And maybe that's very bad. I don't know the sort of ethics of doing that, but I would be lying if I didn't find it a really exciting...
Yeah, I think if in my heart, if I'm completely honest, I'm like, well, why not have an example of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's we've like, got enough other...
Right. It's like, it's galvanising.
And in a way, it worked as a twist, because you are watching the film going, well, I mean, Hitler's going to go away, isn't he? He doesn't. Mm. And it's a real twist. You go, oh, I wasn't expecting that, because of the whole what happened in real life thing.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I think that it's, yeah. But what that does is it solidifies it as like, okay, this is complete fiction.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, we're just, you know, I think that's, but then there's all, you know, there are so many that have that, the repeat watch quality about them. And I don't know what it is that makes a film that. I think the dialogue maybe, weirdly Good Will Hunting's one I just can't get enough of. I love that film. I think I just find Matt Damon very satisfying in it, just as a man. I just like looking at him in it.
What a satisfying fellow.
Yeah. Goodfellas is one. Synecdoche, New York, I've watched a billion times. Yeah. Mm.
Great. What is, you know, you're in comedy. You're very funny. You make funny stuff.
Thanks, man.
What's the funniest film? What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I just think it's so rare that ever happens.
Yeah.
Just don't love many comedy films. I think that the most I've laughed at a film is We Came Together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think it's like... But that, I think it sits in a completely different... It's almost not a film because it's such a parody.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the sort of... It's sort of an equivalent to, like, Scary Movie or something, as far as, like...
It's like a highbrow Scary Movie.
It's like a highbrow Scary Movie, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't... That, to me, it's like... It feels like it's only just a film. It's basically just a long sketch.
Yeah.
But I think it's also because I smoked weed the night that I watched it, and I hadn't done for, like, 2 years, and I just had the best time. And I don't necessarily always piss myself laughing. I don't remember always finding films really funny when... That was the case, but I was like, at the time, I felt like it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life, and that memory, I haven't seen it since. So that, and I think Superbad is pretty amazing.
Yeah?
I don't know if it has repeat value, but I think it stands up. I just think Michael Cera and Jonah Hill's chemistry is lovely, and there's so... At the time, I think it was such a unique voice that I think has been done enough now that you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if I have the answer to that.
I think We Came Together, Stoned is a great answer.
Yeah. That's I love, like, there are so many comedy films that I love, but I don't find that funny. Like, all of Michael Winterbottom and Steve Coogan stuff, I think is incredible. 24 Hour Party People is perfect. I love A Cock and Ball Story.
Yeah.
Anchorman, I think, is genius. Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, all great stuff. But I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I don't chuckle my head off.
That's okay. Mm. I appreciate your honesty. You're in comedy. You're miserable. You've been a wonderful guest.
Thanks, Brett.
Thanks for coming on. Now, when you popped outside to check on that hullabaloo that was caused by a tweet, and everyone was whacking around.
Oh, don't remind me.
There was all that hubbub.
Killed me.
And you got nicked on the side of your head. When you got nicked on the head and you fell to the floor, they just, no one even noticed, they carried on whacking around and your body got sliced into hundreds of bits, splattered all over the street, right? But no one, it was like, it looked like, you know, that tomato throwing thing that they do in Spain, and no one even noticed, your body was splattered, splattered, splattered. And when finally, whoa, the person who sent that original tweet did a video apology where they said, I'm so sorry I did that tweet.
They found out what happened to me.
No one knew you were dead yet. Right. They just said, I'm sorry I did that tweet. I'm sorry, of course, yeah, that's your hubbub. I don't mean what I said. I appreciate I've offended everyone. And I now understand my actions have consequences and words hurt people. And I'm so sorry. And then there was a few more essays, some saying that apology wasn't enough, some saying that apology wasn't good. About a couple of weeks passed and then something else happened, everyone forgot about it.
Whoa.
When everyone finally calmed down about that and moved on to the next thing, they looked out in the street and your body was fucking, not only splattered, but it already started rotting.
Are you joking?
Yeah, it was awful. It was quite bad. And I was like, where's Jamie? We haven't seen him in a while.
Right, yeah.
And we knocked on your door and your flatmate was watching Phantom Thread again. He said, I put Phantom Thread on because I thought it would like draw him back in.
Back, yeah.
But he's not come back. And then I was like, you see that bit on like the doorstop? It's got his eyebrow. Because I've got it looks like one of my eyebrows, but I've got both of mine on.
So it wasn't one of yours.
So I knew it was yours. And then we found bits of you all over. Anyway.
Right.
We basically, all of us scrape up bits of you from all over the street. And then some people found it in their hair from the hubbub and stuff like that. So there's shit everywhere, I'll be honest.
How are you riffing all this?
It's not just... It's not just you.
Masterclass.
It's bits of like pebble, bits of... Some of it went in the bin. There's a bit of dog shit. I'm sorry, but you know, they were attacked.
You saved us up to the fridge.
And anyway, we scraped it all together. Bits of you, bits of dog shit, bits of hedge, some post, all sorts, some mulch, leaves, because it was autumn. Anyway, we managed to pack you into the coffin. But unfortunately, because of all the extra stuff that was stuck
I've left
here,
your flat, by the way.
The extra stuff that was stuck to you, it's absolutely Rammo. It's Rammo in the coffin. There's no room in there.
Mate, let me go to heaven.
There's
please. Only
room in there for one DVD.
Right.
Oh, you're going to slip it in the side and take it with you. And on the other side, there's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you going to take to show everyone?
Okay. I was going to say This Is England because I love it so much. And it's a big influencer style-wise for the stuff I'd like to try and make.
Yeah.
But a bit bleak.
Yeah, a bit
for heaven. So I thought, what is a toss-up, weirdly, and they're both docs, because I think that documentaries are more uplifting because they actually mean something. And it's between...
Yeah.
Do you know what? I was going to say Nothing Like a Dame, but not that, because that's about life, not about death. That doesn't mean anything. Mine's for His Next Goal Wins. Have you seen that? It's a documentary about the worst international football team in the world.
Oh, Next Goal Wins. I thought you said Next Girl Wins.
No.
Yes, Next Goal Wins.
Next Goal Wins, yeah. That I watched and then I watched again and I watched again. I watched it three times in a row. It was just so euphoric and lovely and funny and charming and brilliant. And I think that it's not necessarily something that everyone's watched.
You're the first person to take a documentary. What a guy.
Well, I'm not, I like a doc, but I'm not, I think that is what everyone's going to be wanting in heaven, because it's in line with the heavenly qualities.
It's a great answer. And I think in a way they're relieved you didn't take a film about anxiety and death that you've watched 7 years.
Oh yes, Next to New York is being left on earth for everyone to treasure.
Yeah, because you now got to heaven and be like, I didn't need that. I didn't need all that anxiety. Mm.
But Nothing Like a Dame is very good.
That's the actors.
It's the thing about Judi Dench and Maggie Smith and everyone.
Roger Michelle.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Lovely.
Absolutely brilliant.
Well, Jamie Dimitri, are you...
Did you struggle on my surname there? Christ.
Jamie Dimitri.
I've known you for a few years,
Jamie
mate.
Dimitri.
People get through a syllable of my name a year.
Jamie Dimitri. What an absolute joy you've been.
Thank you so much. Likewise.
I think you'll find from the feedback you get from this that you should be yourself more often. It's not so bad. A shame you died on the day you found that out. Thank you for coming. Enjoy yourself in heaven. Is there anything you need to plug or say before you go?
Plug. Oh, I'm going to the pub in a bit.
He's going to the pub, so if anyone wants to...
I'm actually not.
He really isn't. He's going home to watch Phantom Thread again.
Yes, please.
Thank you for being here, and good day to you.
Cheers.
Goodbye. So that was episode 57. Don't forget to get tickets for the live show tonight with Roisin Conaghy. That's the 15th of August at the BFI website. Join the Patreon for the extra content with Jamie at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. And if you do enjoy the show, please subscribe and give it 5 stars and a nice review. Tell me a film that meant the most to you in that review, and I'll read it and feel all warm inside. And apparently it helps our numbers, and it means more people get to hear it. I can keep making it, etc., etc., until we all die or the internet explodes. Thank you so much to Jamie for doing it. Remember to watch his show, Stathlet's Flats, on Monday at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. Thanks to Scroobius Pip, the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics, Lisa Lydon for the artwork. Come join me next week, where I have another amazing special guest. Who's it going to be? Keep your eyes out. I'll let you know soon. In the meantime, have a lovely week, and please, be excellent to each other.
Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.